Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
Movies and booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
It is time for Movies and Booze. We are joined in the studio by Chris Wasser, Fionnuala Jones, and the man with the fabulous shoes, Leslie Williams. Good afternoon to you all.
Hello.
Are you well? Leslie, yes. Let's start with you.
Okay. Yeah, we are drinking wines from Piemonte, okay. Which is probably my favourite wine region in Italy, certainly, and then arguably maybe the world. I just thought about this. When you see you're near France, you're near Genoa. Piemonte is the northern western part of Italy. So Turin would be the capital. Mm. So if you head north, you're into the mountains and Switzerland, and Austria is just over there. But France is there. Grenoble, if you cross the Alps at Grenoble, then you basically end up just about an hour from Turin. I've been over there for the Slow Food Festival. I did have honestly, one of the best meals of my life, which was in the Torre restaurant in Barbaresco village, where I was drinking Barbaresco wine, now made from Nebbiolo, and I was eating Dieci. I had the local pasta, which is it's like spaghetti, but it's thicker, and it's egg pasta, but with 10 grammi di tartufo bianco grated on top, which is 10 grams of white truffle my pasta.
Okay. And that's it. That's what you're getting. You're just getting the pasta. And the
pasta.
Yeah.
Truffles, and it was a bit of a kind of creamy sauce as well, but and Barbaresco. And the Barbaresco on a good year can have the kind of lovely truffle character. Anyway, I didn't bring you Barbaresco and truffles.
Yeah. Okay, I want to hear more about this dinner. It was lovely.
It's the truffle capital of Italy. It's the cheese capital of Italy. More PGI cheeses than anywhere else. It has the most DOCG wines, so Barolo, Barbaresco, Barbera d'Alba, Barbera d'Asti, Gavi, Dolcetto, Doliani. There's loads and loads and loads of appellations.
Yeah. So you had this dinner and then you look for some sort of bargain place to get it which you brought back here.
That year, the truffles weren't expensive. That was in the late, it was about 2009 or so. I was over at the Slow Food Festival, which is in Turin. I think the 10 grams cost me about €40. Some years, 10 grams of truffles could cost you 190 or 300. It depends. I mean, they're very expensive. It depends on how many have been found and so on. But it is a lovely thing. And nothing to do with truffle oil. Please don't put truffle oil anywhere near anything. It is 2 ersatz cents robbed from the 500 cents that you would be in a truffle, and then there's no comparison. So, will I actually tell you about wine?
Yeah, do we? I might as well. That was an enjoyable scenic route there.
We are starting with Gavi. I have Gavi from the commune of Gavi. So you'll see Gavi from the province of Piedmont, and it can be called Gavi if it's
when
just
outside. When they say Gavi de Gavi, is that what that means?
It's like kind of Gavi from the outside the town of Gavi.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's still really good when it's outside there, but something about the townland around the town of Gavi makes it really, really interesting. So I should pour some.
So, okay, well, we won't be drinking it yet. What's the other one?
Okay, sorry, the other one then is a Barbera. Yeah.
Okay.
From a little bit further south. So red and white.
Okay, lovely. And so the two movies today are is like the Ballad of a Small Player, maybe... But Colin Farrell might win an Oscar. Is that am I going nuts?
Oh,
here?
He's not winning an Oscar.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry.
No, he's great. Then. But it is. Yeah, it's another Colin Farrell, another great Colin Farrell performance in an ordinary Colin Farrell film. If that makes sense.
Yeah,
he does a lot of those. But yeah, Ballad of a Small Player is in cinemas from today. You're seeing an awful lot of Netflix funded films get limited cinema releases at the minute. So it's the same for Ballad of a Small Player, the new Catherine Bigelow one as well. Frankenstein is going to be in cinemas for a couple of weeks. There's a lot of this around award season so that they can find maybe an audience in cinemas. So that's one of the ones that we'll be looking at. Actually, both films are about two men who find themselves in very tight spaces. So Colin Farrell's playing this insatiable gambler in Macau, which is, you know, sort of the Las Vegas of China, and he's down to his last dime and he's in an awful state. And then the other film, Roofman, Channing Tatum, and this one's actually based on an outrageous true story. This really happened. He's playing this mild-mannered convict who used to be in the army, is struggling to pay his bills, starts kind of breaking into restaurants through the roof. That's how he gets this Roofman moniker. We'll get into the backstory later. But after he's eventually caught, he ends up in prison. He broke free of prison and hid out in a Toys R Us for 6 months.
And I think I remember reading about that.
Yeah, this really happened, yeah. And not only did he hide out in a Toys R Us, he used to break out of Toys R Us some days. Obviously, no one saw him. And he started a little bit of a life for himself. Got a girlfriend, had a little place in the community, made some friends, went to church.
Ah, oh, lovely.
Yeah.
And did she ever go back to his place kind of thing?
I don't think so.
No. They should have. Actually, I think you were just talking about this. I saw a trailer for Begonia, the new Yorgos Lanthimos film in the cinema last night. Was stunned to discover that Jesse Plemons has been cast completely against type as an awkward, softly spoken, oddball, simpleton character. Seriously, how does Plemons get away with playing the exact same character in every single movie and TV series for the last 15 years and get praised and tipped for Oscars? He's the most typecast and limited range actor since Tommy Lee Jones, says James in Cabra. James has a lot of opinions packed in
what
there.
What did Jesse do to you?
Yeah.
How long have you been sitting on that for? Yeah, I'm trying to think of maybe has Jesse Plemons done it? Jesse Plemons did do a great comedy. Remember Game Night? But he did play.
Oh, I love Game Night.
But he did play an absolute weirdo. Game Night.
Yeah.
But very funny guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think there's an embargo still on Begonia, so I don't know how much we can talk about it. But like, I think his categorization of that character is wrong based on the trailer. So.
Okay. So hang on there, James.
Yeah.
He could have expanded outside the Tommy Lee Jones.
From my perspective, anyway, I think that's a very simplified view.
Yeah. He played like a straight, like a government agent type. He'd slimmed down. It was a TV series that I saw.
Oh, yeah. The De Niro one. Yeah. He was an okay advisor. What was it called?
Yeah, I can't remember. Yeah.
Okay,
it was kind of a spy thing. But he was slightly different. Yeah. Like he was kind of considered a competent, intelligent person.
Okay, and the Emmy goes to not that show, because I can't remember the name of it. Right, so, but explain to us, Fionnuala, what a vertical is. We did actually do an item on this a few months ago.
Yes.
This really is something, I don't know if it's culture eating itself.
But
you watch it, it's specifically designed to watch on your phone.
Yeah, so you know that we had like made for TV movies. This is like made for mobile TV shows, essentially. They're serialized stories and they're usually divided into 1 to 3 minutes. So like, and maybe over the space of 1 to 3 videos, usually. You've platforms like Dramabox and Real Short put them out, but like they're on YouTube, they're on TikTok as well. They're becoming absolutely huge to the point where SAG-AFTRA are now having to specifically tailor like contracts to verticals, because so many actors are going to vertical. If you're like a jobbing actor, verticals are kind of handy because they shoot really quickly and they're low budget and you'll still get paid doing the thing you love. Because I think there's a thing like, generally speaking, the budgets for these are under $300,000. And because, again, they're made for, like, it's not nowhere near on the same scale as it would be for a TV show or a film. But like, they're very soapy. They usually have titles. Like, there's some examples here. Fake Dating My Rich Nemesis and Claimed by My Ex's Alpha Brother. So that'll give you an insight as to what content is.
No, they're soapy.
But it's kind of not going anywhere in a way. Like, you've Fox Entertainment have just taken this stake in a vertical company called Holy Water. They use AI. Not all of them use AI, but like, some of them do. I think I saw before I came in here, the founder of E, the channel, the entertainment channel, has either invested or has started up his own verticals platform as well, where I think it's like on a subscription basis, you pay, I think it was $5 a month and you get access to all this verticals content. So yeah, it is really, I don't know what that says about us and our ever waning attention span. This is where we're going for the entertainment, but by the other token, then the actors will say, and there's not a lot of actors, but there's one actor in particular that I follow on TikTok, and she's a jobbing actor, and she's kind of built a social media platform from showing like behind the scenes and like how much she earns and what she does and stuff like that. And verticals, she'd go through what she'd earn in a month and what kind of job she does, and verticals seems to be creeping in more and more for her, because usually it's like a day, could be 2 days, could be less than that. You know what I mean? So,
yeah. Actually, yeah. Given we've just talked about this, let's talk about the US box office and Roofman being one example of this.
Very that, like, slow.
Films aren't getting in any money anymore.
Yeah, it's not looking great. Yeah, Roofman over in the States. We're not speaking globally, but I'm talking about the domestic box office in the States. But like Roofman debuted to $8 million, which is like nothing against its budget. They're kind of pointing to a few issues here, but like a few other examples. Smashing Machine only brought in like is kind of like an out and out flop against its budget. I think also Smashing Machine had some difficulties because it was opening, like it opened the same weekend as that Taylor Swift film. So,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Very difficult. Kiss of the Spider Woman also kind of, I think it opened to like $850,000, which is crazy. Like that's so low against a $34 million budget. And then even something like One Battle After Another, again, while it's doing kind of well globally, I think it's at $140 million. In the state, I think it needs $300 million to break even. And I mean, we're already, how many weeks is that film out? 2 weeks? Like
maybe
it's
three, four maybe even.
Basically, yeah. They're putting it that it's the, there was 70, in terms of the budget, there's $70 million put against their promotional efforts, right? And then also with DiCaprio, he gets first dollar gross on his movies. So he gets a percentage of box office revenues before the studio gets anything. So like that's kind of one specific issue. But this analysis, Sean Robbins was speaking in the press, he was also saying that it's also because like people aren't going to the movies anymore. They're waiting for things to go to streaming.
They're sure
like,
they are, yeah.
And then films have a shorter window in cinemas because they know that. Like they used to be in cinemas for 90 days, generally speaking. Now it's like a couple of weeks if you're lucky, you know? So it's a very strange, weird time. We just don't want to leave our houses.
It's scary stuff. And then why should I watch something on Netflix? It takes so long. I'll watch this minute long TV show on my phone.
I still think One Battle After Another taking in 140 million plus, and it'll be in cinemas for a few weeks more, is very good for an R-rated Paul Thomas Anderson film.
Yeah, and
very
and it's good. Over 3 hours. Yeah.
And if it gets Oscar nods, it might get a re-release.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is playing on fewer screens because it's nearly 3 hours long. So that is very good. Unfortunately, it cost far too much money to make. So there, I think the conversation has to be about why that sort of film needed that budget in the first place. I think it may be, I don't know if I put that in the box office failure. Something like The Smashing Machine, I don't know if it was marketed the right way or to the right audience. I think maybe Dwayne Johnson and the Safdies are kind of playing towards the wrong audience. But I also think that's just a little bit of a bump for a few weeks. Like we're going into November where there are going to be more blockbusters. There's going to be a Wicked sequel. It's so weird. Like, I feel like every 5 or 6 weeks we're like, oh, the box office is in trouble. Cinemas are in trouble. And then a Wicked comes along and everyone's like, it's fine.
Oh, I keep forgetting the Wicked sequel. I'm excited for that.
Yeah, but isn't there an assumption that when a Wicked comes along, it's going to drag everything else in its wake rather than Wicked turns up, does well, goes home?
Yeah,
it's not like all the other mid-range movies are doing well out of this.
No, no. Some mid-range movies continue to do very well. Warner had a really good year with films that I don't think they expected, with original films that they didn't expect to do very well. Sinners, for instance, which wasn't based on anything but made an absolute fortune. So I think it has been, it's not been a banner year, but it's not been the worst either.
Okay. Zero Day. That was the name of that movie with
I have zero recollection of that.
With Jesse Plemons. There you go. Still does. Yeah, all the memories come rushing back. So, Leslie, tell us about our first wine of the day today.
Over a wee glass.
Oh, lovely glass. Yeah.
So, our wibbly wobbly real glasses again. Now, I'll tell the name of it right. So, Giordano Lombardo. And it is a small producer from Gavi based. He has 11 hectares scattered around in woody parts around the town of Gavi. Enrico Fantasia brings this in of Grape Circus, and he is working a lot with Sheridan's. So you'll find it in Sheridan's shop in South Ann Street. 64 Wines have the Green Man Wines, and you'll find it on some wine lists and so on. It's very popular. It's Italy's answer to Chablis in many ways. All the seafood restaurants in down on Genoa and around there all love it. So they don't even really need to export it because they can sell it all in those restaurants. I just think it's got a lovely floral note, some lovely minerality.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Cortese's a grape. It's not a grape that you can ever get masses of complexity. You're never going to get, you're never going to get kind of like really intense flavors and really intense emotions from it, if you will, but you can always get lovely minerality, lovely chalkiness, a little bit of floral, honeydew, lemon, that kind of, and I think it's really tasty.
And is the grape Gavi?
The grape is Cortese, C-O-R-T-E-S-E. Right, okay. A grape only really found in this region. It's found in other parts of Piemonte, but not really found outside the wine region. Mm. It's very specific to there. This was kind of Italy's first stellar, famous white wine, long before Pinot Grigio and Vermentino and Ridici di Castiglione and all that sort of, it was their first sort of really successful white wine post-war. And I, it's, look, there's a few others around. I mean, you'll find versions of it in supermarkets, and Lidl have a decent one. There's one Fontefreda that I like, but this is probably the best one that I found, just in terms of texture and flavour. And as I say, 23 is actually pretty good for
San Martino, it's called. Right. Yes. So what movie would you like to talk about?
We'll start with Roofman.
We'll start with Roofman coming up after this.
We all like going back in time and imagining how things could have gone differently. Like, what if I made different choices? Would I have ended up here?
It's been 6 months and still no leads on the whereabouts of the escaped convict known as the Roofman.
I was never very good at life.
Good morning, team. No. Don't be scared.
Kind of like I was not good at hurting people.
Dwayne, get your coat.
I don't have one.
Are you serious?
Here.
Okay, that's Roofman. That's in cinemas now, Chris?
It is in cinemas from today, yeah. It opened America there last week. And I think it will make maybe a tidy sum. But I don't think it costs a fortune to make. Like, it's got this independent filmmaker, Derek Kean France. Every time I say his name, I hope I'm pronouncing it right. Behind it, you know him from The Place Beyond the Pines, Blue Valentine. Like, it's a very, like, it seems like a big film, and it sounds like a superhero film, to be honest. But it's a very small, likable, charismatic crime comedy, which tells an outrageous and outlandish true story. So you had this guy, Jeffrey Manchester, years ago, like late 90s, army veteran, divorced, couple of kids, struggling to keep a roof over his head and to pay the bills. And he is the most likable man in America. Also a little bit of a genius, but there's this great quote where the police eventually, initiating this manhunt for him. One police officer said, "This guy is a genius, but he's also a goddamn idiot." You know, he had an awful habit.
As many geniuses are, actually. Yeah,
that's true. Yeah, he had an awful habit of just, he'd come up with a great plan, but then he'd just make a mess for himself along the way. Probably because, like, he was a really nice guy underneath it all. So anyway, he started, he used to work at McDonald's. And so he knew the McDonald's that he worked in inside out. And he just thought to himself, I would know how to rob this place, hide out in it overnight, like break in through the roof overnight, hide out in it, wait for the staff to show up next morning and then rob them when they come in. So I completely surprised them. So he did it once and it worked out. So he decided to do it another 44 times. And
McDonald's.
It's not the same McDonald's. I mean, you know, at some point along the way, they'd be like, we need a new security team here.
Yeah.
But he would always be very nice about it. He would break in, the staff would show up. He would be armed, but he would say to them, "Hey guys, listen, you know, I'm not going to hurt you as long as you all kind of, you know, I don't want to hurt you." He'd usher them all into the freezer. If they needed a jacket, he'd give them his own jacket, and he'd say, "Right, once I'm finished taking the money here, I will call."
Left his driving license inside one.
I don't know the specifics of how he was caught. I mean, if you do it that many times, you are going to start to get a bit lazy about it. But he would actually close the freezer on these guys and then steal the money, and then on his way out ring 911 so that they wouldn't be stuck in the freezer all day.
Yeah,
so you know, at least he was nice about it. But eventually he got caught. He ended up in prison. Broke out of prison because, you know, he's a genius. Hitched a ride to Charlotte, North Carolina. Got that far and then thought to himself, well, look, if I keep running, they're going to keep looking for me. If I hide, they're going to get sick of looking for me. The story will disappear from the news within a month or two and then I'll be free and I can go home and I can go see my kids. So he runs into a Toys R Us. He hides out in the bathroom when they close at night. And then over the next few days, sort of builds a room for himself in between two walls. And survives on a diet of, like, you know, they used to sell baby food in the place. So he survived on a diet of baby food, M&Ms. He kept himself preoccupied. Like, he watched films. He would run around the shop at night. He would, you know, exercise on bicycles. And eventually broke. I'm just telling the story of Jeffrey Manchester here.
Yeah.
Made his way into the town, made his way to the church. He would eat meals there. He got to know the pastor. He got to know the community. And he got to know this girl who became his girlfriend. And he had a life for himself. But that sort of life can't last, and this film shows how eventually, you know, the bubble burst.
Yeah.
So you've got Channing Tatum playing Jeffrey Manchester. Brilliant casting, because Channing Tatum, I think, is an actor who doesn't often get the credit that he deserves. He is quite charismatic, he is quite charming, and he's believable as this, you know, goofball genius.
Yeah.
Who, you know, oh yeah, Channing Tatum could definitely come up with a plan like that, but Channing Tatum is definitely going to ruin a plan like that.
Yeah.
You know, he is great at that. He's got wonderful chemistry with Kirsten Dunst, who is just the beating heart of this story. I think this story needs someone honest to good, like someone that has that warmth. You know, aside from Channing, who has it, but someone who, you know, it's almost like she's the anchor of the film. You want things to work out so that they can have their little happy family together. Yeah. And then you've also got Peter. You've got Lakeith Stanfield in there as Jeffrey's friend. You've got Juno Temple. Ben Mendelsohn playing a brilliant pastor. Ben Mendelsohn, for a change, not playing a bad guy, which is great.
Okay, that's good.
I think it's sort of Ben Mendelsohn playing against type because he, and also doing Derek maybe a favor because he's appeared in Derek King Francis films before. But one of my favorite characters in it is Peter Dinklage as the Toys R Us manager. This awful crank. He's just like, he just makes his life misery.
Yeah, that's becoming a slight shtick for it. For Peter Dinklage as well.
He's the kind of guy, like, he's the kind of guy who keeps walking around the shop and telling people that this is, you know, this is the most important day of the year, and then tomorrow is the most important day of the year, and then the day after, if people ask for time off, he won't give it to them. So wonderful cast. I think it's a daft story, but a good one. And I think Derek King France tells it brilliantly. I thought Channing Tatum again is brilliant in it. I was not expecting much from this. And was pleasantly surprised at how funny it is, how charming it is, but also a film about a guy who hides out in a toy shop while the police are looking for him in the run to Christmas. I did not expect it to make me cry. It did. So it's quite moving too.
You're easy to make cry, though.
Oh, what made me cry?
Everything makes you cry.
It does?
What
did I cry at before?
I'm not keeping a list. I just have a general sense. I don't want to make Chris cry by reading this out. Am I the only one who thinks that one battle after another is overrated? I mean, it was good, but people are losing their minds about it. It was a better than normal action movie. I think there are so few actually good movies coming out of Hollywood that it was refreshing not to have to pan another one.
I haven't seen it. Have you seen it?
Yes. It's not a 5-star film, but it's pretty close. I think you could lose half an hour from the story and it probably wouldn't. I think you could cut half an hour from the film and it wouldn't affect the story. I think there's a bit too much Sean Penn in it and not enough Leo. I mean, it's supposed to be Leo's film. But the stuff that Anderson does in it, if you have seen it, as this listener obviously has, that car chase towards the end is the best action sequence I've seen in the cinema all year. I mean, it's shot from the perspective of both the person. Have you seen it?
No, but I've read about that.
It's fabulous. Yeah. I felt sick watching it, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Okay.
It didn't make me cry.
Yeah. It's not that kind of movie. I assume it's not a crying movie. We will come back to K-pop Demon Hunters.
Did you cry at that, Chris?
Parents will want to know about that. M. Night Shyamalan.
M. Night Shyamalan.
Shyamalan is. He's making a TV series about an 8-ball. Now, we don't want to give people the wrong impression. This is a magic 8-ball. You better tell people what that is.
The magic 8-ball. Remember, it's a few months ago now, but remember post-Barbie, we were living in a post-Barbie world. Mm-hmm. Mattel were kind of working their way through, okay, what other toys can we make into, you know, regurgitated IP, etc., etc. Magic 8-Ball was on that list, and now we know how it is going to be on screens. It is going to be a TV series. M. Night Shyamalan is directing it. It's going to be live action. It's written by Brad Falchuk, who's done American Horror Story. I think he did Bits for Glee and stuff like that. Live action, I think they're kind of positioning it as kind of a bit freaky deaky. So I think the synopsis is they're aiming to reimagine the classic Magic 8-Ball as a centerpiece of a high concept, character driven supernatural drama. So apparently they've been working on that for a few years. It's tentatively titled Magic 8-Ball. Don't have a release date, don't have a cast or anything like that.
Consultants have come back with their results.
Completely ridiculous.
Now, and a Magic 8-Ball is one of those plastic yolks. You ask it a question and shake it and it gives you kind of a random answer.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. You go, am I going to get married this year? And it says better luck next time or something, or it is certain, you know. So I'm imagining it's going to be,
it's got powers,
there's ghosts or something, and the magic ball, 8-ball, controls the ghosts or changes their futures, changes their pasts, etc., etc. I'm like kind of slightly intrigued by it because
when was the last time M. Night Shyamalan, I can't say his name,
Shyamalan.
When did he make,
that's the issue,
when did he last make it?
His
indecent
track record is ropey? Is that the politest way to say it?
Yeah.
It's up and down.
He's a great ideas man, but I think he should give those ideas to someone else.
The execution isn't always...
He can't write dialogue.
I also don't know about being in the hands of Brad Falchuk. I think he's a very specific tone that will appeal to a certain... I feel like if you like his stuff... He's very like Ryan Murphy and they're good, like frequent collaborators.
Oh,
I feel like if you like his stuff... Then, I mean, you're like two thumbs up, can't get enough, but I don't know. This has potential to be good or like maybe a little bit like campy, funny, but I feel like it could also be very overwrought and very not good.
Okay, so yeah, you're tempering your fascination there.
Maybe, maybe I've talked myself
out of
it.
Well, you just talked yourself directly out of it. Garbage, says Fionnuala Jones. Texter says, tell the crier that an Australian sheepdog has mottled grey hair from birth. It won Crufts a couple of years ago.
Okay.
Okay, that doesn't sound as bad. That's no. More like a, that's a style thing rather than, you know, a decrepit dog limping around Crufts.
Aging, yeah.
Yeah. You see, they wouldn't do that in Crufts. They'd probably go, no. Anyway, Leslie's pouring us out some... the red version of our Piedmont wine today. So
the red version is Piemonte. Sorry, it is a Barbera. Barbera d'Alba. Okay, so Barbera is kind of the second grape of Piemont. The main famous grape of Piemont, red grape, is Nebbiolo. Mm. So Nebbiolo Lange, it's the grape in Barolo, in Barbaresco. You also find it in some other wine regions, but it is kind of complex.
Fionnuala's giving you daggers there.
Oh, yeah. Where's your glass?
I don't know, put you under pressure, I gave it to you, sorry.
Okay, you just keep talking while Fionnuala had taken our glass.
Where's my glass then?
Okay.
That's so weird.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, black. I can remember it. So Barbera is the second grape. So so it's kind of like Barolos and Nebbiolos are kind of the showcase, but they take time to age. Much more approachable in youth. This is Pellicero. It is exclusive to the allotment.ie. Chris Gifford's little independent online off license. He has a really good Barbera, Barbaresco, Nebbiolo de Lange from them as well. Just lovely black, juicy fruit.
Oh, that's
cherry.
Gorgeous.
Herbal, bit of freshness, and fair. I just think it's one of those really good wines with the kind of food that you would get in there as well. Mm, so with pasta, maybe a little rich for Vitello Tonnato. But like, so one thing to mention very briefly: there's a little chocolate tone in this, and that is one of my memories of driving through that region, because between Alba and Asti, the two main wine villages, there's a bang of chocolate in the air because Nutella is made there, so you can smell chocolate everywhere.
Like, there's a big Nutella factory.
Yeah, the Ferrero Rocher factory. One of the best places to work in the world, apparently. They have healthcare and everything. And all the hotels around have jars of Nutella that are as big as a small child that you can almost stick your head into. If anyone likes Nutella.
Okay, so something for the whole family there. That sounds nice, really. And you know, just coming to that dinner we were talking about, because like my impression of Italy is that each, you know, there are thousands, or I don't know if it's thousands, but different sorts of pasta. And there's pasta that's specific to townland.
And they're specific. And they love to put truffles on it, obviously, if it's in season. But also mushrooms. It's quite 45% woods and mountains and stuff. So there's loads of like places to go find mushrooms, hence the famous white truffles and black truffles as well, somewhat. But and honestly, if you smell a white truffle, I mean, it is... there's nothing like it on earth. I mean, as a result, that's why I can't have the oils, because they're just, it's so much more complex, the real thing. Yeah. And it's ephemeral as well. You've got to, like, I was given a small one by a chef one time during COVID when he had some left over, or when he didn't, you know, because he had to keep his order in. This is Bar Italia down on the quays there. So David gave me this amazing white truffle, and I put it in a jam jar with risotto rice, and then was sort of smelling the jars. I was eating the risotto, and like, it was just, yeah.
Does it keep?
Not very well. I did try freezing it, and that worked, but I had a tiny, like literally a, like a thumbnail left, and I thought I'd freeze it, but actually it kind of went off. It was not nice, but that was my own fault for just kind of keeping it for too long. But no, freezing it will work for a good while, you know.
Okay. And can you get like proper
Getting them in Ireland, you'd need to probably contact like one of the suppliers for the restaurant trade, like LaRousse or one of those kind of people. But
there's a chipper in Finglas that
does brilliant.
Chips with fresh
truffles. They're black truffles. He looks like he really knows what he's doing. Yeah, it's a really good chipper in Finglas who puts truffles on your, like, fresh black truffles.
Wow,
truffle
okay.
Marcellus. It's Marcellus, I think.
That's exactly. Yeah. If you just Google truffle chips, chipper in Fingal. Yeah. But proper, like, not truffle oil. Like, all the rest of
Grated.
Yeah,
it's like, I haven't tried it, but it looks really good.
Yeah.
Sounds fabulous. Right, we'll move on to our... tell us about the Red, White and Royal Blue sequel.
Yes, this was... We knew we were getting this, but we have kind of official confirmation of it. This is the sequel to Red, White and Royal Blue on Prime, based on a book. Basically, what happens if the Prince of England and the son of the US president get together? Dun, dun, dun. Like, they're more than enemies to lovers. Hugely successful for Amazon. So the sequel's been greenlit. It's called Red, White and Royal Wedding. Love that. And Jamie Babbitt is directing it. Jamie Babbitt did But I'm a Cheerleader and has done a couple of episodes of Only Murders in the Building. I'm presuming the two stars are coming back, Zachary Perez and Nicholas Galitzine. No idea of dates or like actual plot, but will be another smash for Amazon, I'm sure.
Yeah. This is kind of... is this for kids?
No.
Okay.
Like...
I think
the book is positioned as young adults, but the show is probably a little bit more, probably at your discretion. Definitely not for kids.
Steamy.
Yeah.
Okay, a bit more steamy.
A little bit steamy, yeah.
Has a bit more like princess president action going on.
Yeah.
Okay. Right, we'll move on to our second movie of the day. It is Ballad of a Small Player. Here's a clip.
Macau, gambling capital of the universe. Here. Card games can change your life in an instant. My name is Doyle. Lord Doyle.
Mr. Riley. You stole a considerable sum of money from a client.
I've made some mistakes. Right, who hasn't?
You have 24 hours.
Right, okay, so that pretty much sums up the conundrum for him.
Yes, yeah, so Colin Farrell is playing a man who likes to call himself Lord Doyle, and he's like the snazziest tourist in Macau. This guy just has the best dinner jackets, he's got his lucky golden gloves, which he plays every card game with, but he's clearly been in Macau and in his suite, which is in an awful state, for too long, and apparently, you know, his wallet's empty, you know, he's really got nothing left, and there are people outside in the hallway sliding, you know, bills under the door, there's people downstairs guarding the exits. He has a hefty bill. He's just on the mother of all losing streaks, and he's got 72 hours to pay for it. Then, you know, so he's kind of got nowhere to go and kind of nothing to do, so he finds another casino, he finds another opponent, there's always another game, there's always another opportunity for him to kind of lose more money, even though he doesn't actually have anything.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden, two mysterious women enter his life. One of them, Mao Deng, runs a casino and kind of offers him a lifeline, and she's kind of one of the only people in this story who sees through the mask, because there is a mask there, and she knows who he is, and she actually wants to help him. The other is Tilda Swinton's Cynthia Blythe, who's a bit of a private eye, and she kind of looks as though she's wandered in from a Wes Anderson film, like a completely different story altogether. And she also sees through Doyle. She knows who he is. If you thought maybe, and this is not a spoiler, this is just part of the basic premise, if you thought just from listening to that clip that Colin Farrell is doing a bit of a wobbly London accent, it's because he is. It's supposed to be. He's an Irishman.
Ah, right.
He's an Irishman on the run. He did not acquire his fortune through legal means. He has been, you know, he's been behaving very badly with someone else's money, and he owes all the wrong people. So he's got a few days to sort everything out. You're thinking to yourself here, what could go wrong? Absolutely everything. So this is directed by Edward Berger, who was on a bit of a roll there at the Oscars for a couple of years. He did All Quiet on the Western Front, and he also did Conclave. So I think maybe the folks at Netflix thought, well, this is going to be his Oscar hat trick.
Yeah.
I don't think that's quite the case. So I'll get the problems out of the way. I think it's like the story builds and builds and builds and builds and builds, and then it just fizzles out. It's over stylized, but also a little bit underbaked when it comes to the narrative. I think there's this overbearing operatic score which kind of never gives out, and that was a bit too much for me. The sound design as well, I think this is intentional. The sound design is turned up to 11, so every terrified gulp, every crunch of food, because this guy is not even just addicted to gambling, it's drink, it's food, everything. Yeah, you can, it's nauseating. But I think that's the point, because this whole thing kind of resembles this sickening post-Bender nightmare. It's supposed to make you panic. I think you're supposed to be
kind of leaving Las Vegas type.
Yeah, exactly. And Farrell is a little bit more restrained than Cage. But I think it's,
you've left a lot of room there.
Absolutely. Yeah. And also, I think, again, Tilda Swinton, I wasn't really buying her character at all. She did look as though she was in a Wes Anderson thing. That wasn't really working for me. And the story kind of just, it introduces people and then it quickly just, you know, kicks them out. Like, you have Alex Jennings in there, who I like quite a lot. He's a ghost from Doyle's past. He's dropped in, you know, it seems like he just parachutes into the film and then he's never seen again. So it's a little bit choppy. It doesn't really seem fully formed. But that being said, Farrell is brilliant in it. And I think he's just made a habit. Like, he has been on a really good run for the last couple of years, whether it's the stuff on the small screen, also film-wise. This year, maybe not so much. I know we were reviewing A Big, Bold, Beautiful Journey not too long ago. Yeah. This is much better. But you have that thing again where his presence just elevates everything. And on paper, Lord Doyle is just a scoundrel and he's a caricature and he's someone that you just can't get on board with. He's done terrible things and you think to yourself, good luck to this guy. I hope he gets what's coming to him. When Farrell plays him, though, you can't help but like him. You can't help but feel sorry for him. You find him so charismatic, even when he's falling apart. You want to help him when he starts having panic attacks. And that's the Farrell magic. He just has this ability. I think he is incapable of giving anything less than 100% to every project that he's in. He could be in the worst film in the world and he would go and he'd be all in.
Absolutely. But he's also incapable of coming across as unlikable.
He is.
I mean, there's always, even no matter how much he tamps it down, there's a little bit of, you know, charm is there, which he uses. You know what I mean? In like, because this is a guy, as you said, you wouldn't like, but you kind of do. There's something about him.
And I think in the second half of the film as well, when you learn maybe just a little bit more about his story, or you see him kind of acting kind towards Del Maine, I think there is a likability there. I'm trying to think, The Horrible Bosses, he obviously wasn't likable in. And then that film, that BBC series where he played this vicious, horrible boatman. There are a couple of roles.
Okay. I defer to your superior knowledge. So this is a Netflix job where they've stuck it in the cinemas for a couple of weeks in the hope of winning something, and then 2 weeks' time you'll...
Yeah, and I don't know how well that's going to work for them, because I think people are going to see the Netflix banner and think it's going to be on the small screen in a couple of weeks. Why would I go to the cinema? Do go to the cinema for this. It's not Edward Berger's best film, but it does look amazing at times. As I said, like, if that, you know, overbearing sound design, if you'd like to experience that, you know, in the cinema, go for it. But it will be on Netflix, and I don't think it's going to go all the way to the Oscars, as maybe some of them were hoping.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. We were talking about saving cinema, come Halloween time in Ireland, what will save cinema? Only K-pop Demon Hunters.
Of course. Who else? Who else but the Demon Hunters? They're coming for a limited theatrical run Friday 31st of October, as you said, Halloween, through to Sunday 2nd November. If you have any kiddies or not kiddies who are just interested in K-pop, it's going to be in cinemas. It's interesting though, because Sony Pictures sold this film to Netflix because it kind of didn't believe in it as that it would work in cinemas.
Yeah.
And now obviously it's become this huge, I think it's the most watched film of all time for Netflix. Like, it's crazy. And it's not out. Is it out less than 6 months? Maybe a little bit more. Anyway, it's become huge for them. And the Sony CEO has kind of been talking about whether it was a good call, whatever, where they have like regret and stuff like that. And they're trying to be and they're like, oh, well, like, who was to say if it had been originally released in cinemas, if people would have gone, blah, blah, blah. I'd say they're kicking themselves. I should also say about the cinema release of this, it's a sing along. So if you're thinking, oh, I'll just go and watch it, people will be singing.
Oh, absolutely.
I think that's important.
Well, just in case you happen to be going for the intense narrative.
Maybe.
Thanks to Fionnuala, Leslie, and Chris. That's our lot for today.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.